can dance, everything's out of control. We can dance, we do it from pole to pole. We can dance, everybody look at your hands. We can dance, everybody's taking a chance. Well, it's safe to dance, yes, it's safe to dance. Well, it's safe to dance, well, it's safe to dance. Yes, it's safe to dance, it's safe to dance, yeah. It's safe to dance, it's safe to dance. It's safe to dance, it's safe to dance.
You are listening to WIOX Roxbury, community radio in the Catskills at 91.3 FM. And from the Catskills to the world at WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by the Phoenicia Diner on Route 28, offering diner classics made with fresh ingredients sourced largely from Catskills and Hudson Valley farms, and a bar serving summer cocktails, frozen drinks, and New York beer and wine. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Phoenicia Diner. Come for the mountains, stay for the food. 845-688-9957 or PhoeniciaDiner.com.
WIOX is supported by Freshtown Marketplace in the heart of Margaretville. Open till 9, Monday through Saturday, Sunday till 8, with everything you'd expect in a supermarket, including local and organic foods, gourmet coffees, micro-brew beers and ales, and online shopping. Learn more about online shopping at foodtown.com/shopping.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at WIOXradio.org on the web and on any smart device. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, Ryan. Have you noticed all the turkey poults around? That's my observation this last week, is I've been seeing them left and right every field.
No, I have not.
No, maybe it's just around me then. There's about 15 or so that come out every night, every morning, out in the field in front of my house, and I also see them up and down the road in the Andes area.
No kidding. Yeah, I haven't noticed that too much. I've been just studying my apple trees and, you know, noticing some of the leaf disease problems I've been having. I have some potato leaf hopper problems that I finally got diagnosed, and not happy about it, but am remedying it. And so that's what I've been looking at.
Are they little, what are they, like pea-sized little round bugs?
No.
Green?
No. No, they're like a millimeter long. They look like miniature versions of grasshoppers. They're white looking. Yeah, they can mimic other symptoms of other things, but, you know, that's what they do. So, you know, stuff like that. I declared war on them. I had to use extreme measures, but I'm happy to know what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I also cut down a red cedar tree that has been raining down spores of cedar apple rust on my tree. That felt really good.
Oh, okay.
Really good.
You figured out the logistics to get that on the ground?
I did.
Good.
I did figure out the logistics, and trees on the ground. It's being served as posts now, and that makes me smile because that thing has been turning my leaves yellow for the last, 6 years.
So cedar apple rust, the cedar is the carrier, or is the part one of the...
Yeah, it needs an alternate host, so it needs both cedar tree and apple trees to complete the life cycle, and then you get cedar apple rust. It really retards the growth of your trees.
Huh.
So it doesn't usually kill them, but if it's bad, it can really slow them down.
So how close does that cedar tree need to be worried about?
Well, to be honest, any cedar tree, they say within a quarter mile or more, can rain spores on you. But, you know, there's nothing I can do about that. But there is something I can do about a cedar tree that's literally, you know, 30 yards from my apple orchard. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Cut it down.
Cut it down. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit is plant health care tonight. And let me see if I can get them on. We have Trent Dix from ArborJet. And let's see. Trent, you there?
Yeah, Ryan, I'm here.
How you been, Trent?
Good. Real good. Staying busy.
Oh, I bet. So, Trent, you're with ArborJet. You're the Mid-Atlantic Regional Tech Manager. And I hear you got over 20 years of experience in landscape and nursery sales and operations. Trent also has a BS in Agribusiness Horticulture from Illinois State University, an associate's degree in Applied Science and Horticulture as well. Trent, what got you into this business of horticulture and plant health care?
Ryan, essentially when I was a teenager, 15, I started working in a greenhouse. And from 15, I worked my way up to being a manager by 18, and I just fell in love with plants and the outdoors and enjoyed it. So then I continued on to Illinois Central College and got my horticulture degree, and then I got into landscape design, and I did that for over 20 years, and I just had a passion. I liked being outdoors. I didn't see myself in an office, and I came to ArborJet 6 years ago, and I just fell in love with plant health care and taking care of trees.
And when you're not taking care of trees, before we get into the meat of the show, what are you up to then?
Ryan, I enjoy the outdoors, occasional fishing trip here or there. I like being outside with my daughter, doing things like that, gardening. Who doesn't like to go out in the pool when it's hot in the summertime and visit the beach as well?
How's the garden this year, Trent?
It's doing pretty good, Ryan. I don't have a big garden because I'm on the road a lot, but I've got a little container type stuff, and the tomatoes are coming on well for me, and some peppers and stuff like that, so we can our homemade salsa.
Where do you call home when you're not on the road?
I am in Maryland, right in the northeastern corner of Maryland.
What's the weather like today?
It's about 90 degrees,
Ooh.
A little warm and real humid. And luckily, it's not raining for the first time in a long time.
No kidding. So I see that you also do some hunting?
I do. I enjoy hunting. When I have time for it, I did all kinds of deer hunting and pheasant, duck, and goose occasionally. So I did a little bit of that, Ryan. I have.
What's the deer hunting like down there in Maryland?
It's not too bad. There's some nice-sized deer. I don't know if it's anything like what I experienced when I was in Illinois, but there's a lot of deer here.
That's right. Illinois, man, they must have big deer out there, no?
They do.
So you were spoiled into deer hunting, then.
I was a little bit. I won't lie.
Yeah, they must look like rats to you over there in Maryland compared to Illinois. Jeez. Yeah, I went to a member's property one time over there in Hurley, and I said, wow, man, look at the mount. This is big bucky guy. Like, oh, those are nothing. Those are just little guys. It's like, okay, that's like the biggest deer in New York State. He's like, yeah, I know. Let's go into the Illinois room. I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, I thought they were like fakes. They're so big. But, well, so now you work for ArborJet. And what's the history of ArborJet? You know, like, when was this thing founded? Who developed it?
ArborJet's very unique. It was founded in 2000 by an arborist in Boston, Massachusetts, Peter Wild. Him and a team of members got together and were trying to figure out how to come up with a better way to stop the hemlock willow adelgia. He was just not happy with the soil drenches, the spray, so they started playing with the old military needleless injectors, and ArborJet was born. And that's really how it came about and was developed. You know, they were looking for a better way to treat that, and they found that. You know, with one injection now, you can get up to 3 years control for hemlock willow adelgia. So it's been quite impressive.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they even had hemlock woolly adelgid in Eastern Mass.
Yep, yep. That's where it was born.
No kidding. That's how much I know. Okay. So what's that guy Pete Wild up to now? Is he still involved?
He's still involved. Not as much now, but he still, you know, when he started ArborJet, he still had a plant healthcare business and a tree company. And he still has that. He sold off the tree work portion of it, but still has the plant health care. And he's living on the Cape now and has another plant health care company out there. So he has three companies that he's maintaining and working with, Brian. So he's quite busy.
Is, you know, plant health care, I mean, we're going to get into defining that a little later, but I feel like plant health care is more unknown here in New York State, and it's more known in Eastern Mass and maybe down south. I don't really know. You travel, so you tell me, is plant health care more popular in some areas than others?
Yeah, I would definitely say markets with more urban population, you know, seems to have a lot more plant health care. Lawn care is all tied into that, Ryan, but definitely New England area, New York, I would say New Jersey, all those areas seem to have a lot more plant health care. When you get into areas that aren't as populated, I don't see as much done. You know, it's not as big a deal. And plus, there may not be as many pests or pressures with as many plants and population that you have around there.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix. So, Trent, you know, how would you define ArborJet?
I think ArborJet's a very unique company. We are definitely... was initially developed by arborists. I think we've expanded our market now, Ryan, into horticultural more, looking at natural methods of treating. And just recently this year, we joined a partnership with another company called Ecolagel, where we've expanded into lawn care and a wider range of products. To expand our plant healthcare reach, you know, and give us a broader reach on the different markets. I would definitely say ArborJet's based, you know, a lot on research. A lot of the stuff that we've came out with has came from research, and we know that it works, and we can have, you know, different universities back that up and say that it works. And we're really about the environment, you know. Injecting trees is definitely a safe way to do things. Nothing goes into the ground. Nothing is sprayed out into the area. It's all just injected into the tree, which makes it quite safe.
So nothing can move off-site once it's in the cambium of that tree. It's not going into the soil and moving off-site, right?
That's correct. That's correct. We're actually injecting into the xylem of the tree. So we're putting a plug into that tree, drilling into the xylem, and then we're injecting, insecticides, fungicides, or fertilizers into that tree to help it, preserve it.
A little context, Trent, is what were people doing before trunk injections of chemicals to kill pests? Like what were the modes or ways people were delivering pesticides?
Well, Ryan, I would say the most common practice was probably spraying trees. You know, in the early days, for instance, like in the New England area, gypsy moth. You know, people would be out with spray rigs spraying the gypsy moth, trying to spray 60, 70 feet in the air to stop the gypsy moth. I think products evolved, and we started seeing more soil drenches. One of the older companies in injection was Mojet. I think they came out with a capsule in the 60s. You know, there's always been injection around, but I think the most known was spraying things, and then I think it diversified into some soil injections, and now there's different types of bark sprays. But I really think tree injections revolutionized, because now we can take care of some of these larger trees that we could never treat or try to spray or do something with. You know, it was a game changer in a sense.
So, you know, you inject a tree, and these pesticides work by what? Systemic action?
Correct. They're systemically, so essentially what we are doing, Ryan, is we're using the tree's transpiration system through photosynthesis and that to carry the materials up through the tree. So when the tree's releasing water, the materials are being pulled up into that tree.
You know, Trent, a couple weeks ago, I went to a plant healthcare workshop over in Massachusetts near Boston. And, you know, according to Massachusetts, and I'm sure it's probably pretty similar here in New York State, that if you spray and there's any drift, you know, you could be liable. And it's such a gray area, I would assume that there's so much liability in drift with spraying. And it makes injection even more, likable, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ryan. I think times have changed. I know in New York you have to notify the neighbors in that instance if you're going to be spraying or applying. So the rules are a lot more restrictive on that. You have to worry about animals being out, neighbors' windows being open, all those come into play when you spray, because you can't control what the wind is doing. So I would definitely agree. Injection makes it a lot safer because it's very controlled. You're injecting into the tree and nothing's really being exposed other than when you're loading the IV or, basically there's zero exposure when you're doing it, because the only time is when you're filling the bottles. So it's very safe.
And Trent, I was on ArborJet's website, and what is the range that you guys cover? It seems pretty big.
We have some products in Canada. We cover the the 49 states. We go to Hawaii. I don't know if we do too much in Alaska, but I know we cover the 50 states with 10 people throughout the U.S. that cover those states, Ryan. So we're all throughout in that aspect. And we do ship some of our equipment to other countries, but not really any of our insecticides or anything like that, just mainly equipment people are using.
Well, Trent, we're going to take a break, but up next we'll talk to you about defining plant health care and get into some of the nitty-gritty on insects and mice diseases. And maybe some of your thoughts on weather patterns. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix.
On the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night long, we would sing that stupid song. And every word we sang, I knew was true. Are you with me, Dr. Wu? Are you really just a shadow?
Might not be talking to Dr. Wu, but we're talking to a tree doctor, Trent Dix from ArborJet, and tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix. So, Trent, how would you define plant health care?
I think plant health care is basically good integrated pest management, Brian. Where you're monitoring your plants before they get stressed out or before things happen, trying to be a proactive approach, not allowing your plant to get stressed to where certain pests or diseases can go through, monitoring what goes on, maybe once a month having someone come out if you're choosing to go the professional route or just walking around your yard and seeing what's going on. So you see what is happening in that aspect of it.
So it's like instead of just spraying on some time frame, you actually go out there, see what pests are there, and at some threshold you're like, okay, it's time to spray. Something like that or something different?
That's exactly right, Ryan. You're monitoring and then you're determining when that threshold is broken, do I need to treat and what's the best method of treatment at that time.
And what do you think people's, you talk to so many people, Trent. I mean, what's people's threshold tolerance for pest control, do you think? I know it's a general question, but...
I think it depends on where you're at. Some people may have a less tolerance, where others may, you know, that's not a big deal. I think it depends on your area, where you're at, and how much, you know, what kind of food source or stress do they have in an area. I guess an example would be, we're going to talk about some new different pests coming up, but like the spotted lanternfly that's in Pennsylvania, Ryan, just to give an example. Last year there was a big issue because of the honeydew and black sooty mold that they were creating, you know, and it was causing, making residents' decks look poor, you know, leaking on cars, and people do not want to tolerate that, you know, so that became the threshold was broken, as you were saying.
So, yeah, let's, you know what, that's a good segue. Let's get into some of the plant health care challenges and solutions out there. So, you know, insects and mites, you know, what would be examples of those? Some big ones that you see maybe in the Catskills or New York State, or that you see in your region?
You know, I think one of the big ones that we're starting to see in the Catskills more, you know, when I think of insects, the emerald ash borer, you know, which is devastating the ash trees. It's a bug that came from overseas roughly in 2002, and it's just literally wiping out the entire ash population in America. I mean, in, you know, just a matter of time from when it was found in 2002 till now, I mean, I think it's in over 30 states plus. I mean, it's just spreading faster than anything I've ever seen, you know, and you can choose to treat your tree or it's going to die. You know, that's as simple as it gets for that.
What do you think the end game is with that? I mean, you said you went to school in Illinois, so maybe they have more experience, I think, over there with seeing the ravages of emerald ash borer since it, I think it started there. But what do you think? Where do you think it's going?
I think that with studies that have been done, Ryan, that it's definitely cost-effective to treat your tree. You could probably treat your tree for up to 30 years before it's going to equal the cost to remove and replace. Some of these cities that chose to remove trees, you know, in the earlier days, in certain markets in Illinois, you know, they didn't take into account how much water an ash tree collects, you know. An ash tree will take in 2,300 gallons of water a year. Well, that's pretty significant. That might change your stormwater management plan when you don't have those trees there. So I definitely think that we need to try to preserve our trees. You know, I know that we can't save them all, but the more that we can save, what a value a tree brings to us, yeah. You know, in that aspect, Ryan.
Do you know, like, what diameter these emerald ash borers attack trees? We get that question a lot, right, John?
Yeah, I've heard down to 3 or 4 inches or less. Is that true?
In certain areas, like where they've been ravaged, they'll attack suckers, you know, if there's no ash trees around. They'll actually start attacking them. That's small. It's been said now, too, they've been found on the white fringe tree. So they're changing trees a little bit as well. So these are all things that we have to take into account.
Oh, I didn't know that. What tree is that again, Trent?
The white fringe tree, Ryan.
I'm not familiar.
It's been found attack on them. I'm drawing a blank on the botanical name, Ryan, but I'll remember at some point. But the white fringe tree is what they've seen that it can attack as well and reproduce.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Where's that tree growing?
You know, it's throughout the Mid-Atlantic in areas. It's in the Midwest in some places. I believe it's zone hardy, but I know it was found in Ohio. That's I'm pretty sure that's where it was seen, but I'd have to double check for sure. But it's around. I actually have one, so I know they're all up and down the East Coast.
All right, so I got a beautiful ash tree in my front yard, right? And it cost $1,500 to remove in the Catskill Mountains, and you know, or I could treat it. I could call ArborJet. and or maybe I call an arborist who uses ArborJet products. And how is that done? I mean, what does ArborJet do to save this tree?
So what we do is we supply the equipment for the arborist to save the tree, and then our product Triage or Triage G4 is injected into that tree to save it, Ryan. And with one injection, you're going to get 2 years of control on protecting that tree.
No kidding. So, and that chemical can be used on a wide variety of pests, or is it only, you know, like emerald ash borer?
I want to say it is up to 40 different pests on the label, Ryan, that it will protect against. Southern pine beetle, for one. Pretty much any wood-boring insect, it's very effective. Lepidopterus, gypsy moth, you could use it to protect against that. So, I mean, that's just one of the few that are on that label. But, I mean, at least 40 different pests.
What do you think, Trent? Any other insects and mites that you would, that are notable that you think people should be treating and stuff in our area or yours?
I think for you guys, the spotted lanternfly is a pest to watch. It's moving very fast in my mind. And the scary thing with this pest, Ryan, is I've seen it on every type of tree out there. River birch, maples, pears. I've seen it on crepe myrtles. It's a big concern for the grape industry and the pitted fruit thing. So definitely a pest to worry about. I would say for the Catskills, that would be the next big one that I see coming your way. Mainly it's in Berks County. It was found in Virginia. But we seem to move pests quite well with campers and trailers and trucks and trains. So that would be the next big pest I see coming to your guys' area.
So this spotted lantern... Go ahead, John. You going to say something?
I was probably going to ask the same thing you are, but what is its symptoms? What is the sign? How can you identify it? And what can we expect? What are we seeing with it? I mean, you say all trees like maples. I mean, does the maple industry have to worry about this? And are we going to lose all our maples like we're losing all our ash? What's happening?
I don't think we've seen trees die from it yet, but just imagine thousands of these spotted lanternflies piercing and sucking the sugars out of the tree. As I said before, they cause the honeydew, they cause black sooty mold. In some of the areas where the population's collapsed now, the tulip poplars are seeing a bunch of scale and stuff like that. So they are causing damage to the tree. I mean, it's been in Pennsylvania for 5 years now, John, but... can I say that it's killing trees yet? No, I haven't seen it, but it's definitely causing some damages to them and stressing them out, and it's making a mess. And, I mean, they're a very unique bug. If you Google it and take a look at it, you might even say it's pretty. But certain things, it doesn't really have any predators here. It came from the Korea, North Korea, South Korea area over in Asia, and it ended up here on a shipment of stone, marble to a quarry, and it spread like that.
And is it at all treatable, Trent?
Yeah, they're treating it. The problem is now, Ryan, is it's in the forest, in the woods, and I don't think there's any chance of eradicating it. Now we're here to control it.
Yeah, great. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix. Yeah, Trent, I've heard that it's knocking on our doorstep on the Sullivan County or border of Pennsylvania, and that's not good. So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll be expecting a lot of calls on that one soon, John.
Spotted lanternfly.
So how about diseases? We've been hearing alerts about oak wilt. Have you heard anything about that?
Oak wilt, yes, I have. It's starting to come around. I know it's in the Pittsburgh area. I know that there was about seven cases found in Brooklyn, New York, Brian, that were shipped in by from a nursery. Definitely a scary disease. You know, it can spread through the roots, so if the oaks are touching, you know, you're either going to have to root prune or cut them to stop it, or you could preventively treat with an injection.
And is that true to not prune live branches of oak trees during the summer, or is that false?
That is correct. That is correct. I want to say it's November through February is the only time you can prune when the tree is dormant, because you take the potential of spreading the disease or opening up to contract it. You know, you need to be antisepting your saws and stuff like that, not to spread disease if you're working with one that did have it.
No kidding. And so, out of diseases, what are you getting the most calls on?
I would say anthracnose has been one of the bigger ones that I've seen this year. Diplodia tip blight. A lot of your evergreen diseases have been real big. The blue spruce have had a lot of the side of, I can't pronounce it tonight, Ryan. Rhizophora canker. You know, all those have been out there. Apple scab, fire blight seem to be out there quite a bit. You know, I've heard a lot of cases up and down on that. So there's been quite a bit, and this rain and hot temperatures has definitely been a good thing for diseases.
Why is that, Trent? Well, why is the, you know, rainy weather or whatever enhance diseases?
It gives them more opportunities to grow. It's, you know, wet times cause more issues. Things don't dry out. Which could cause different types of diseases to come on, Ryan. A lot of climates. You know, we have to face the facts that some areas are a lot warmer than they used to be, by whether it's climate change or whatever you want to call it. We do have warmer temps further up. You know, even in your area, you see warmer temperatures than what it used to be. So things are changing, and the plants are having a hard time adapting.
Yeah, this blue spruce is terrible. I get calls about it all the time, and I'm not sure if it's Cytospora canker or Rhizosphera. I can't say that word. And how do you treat that? Is that treatable, Trent?
You know, Ryan, I don't know if there's really a good answer for that. I can tell you, I know guys have used products. I know some guys have said that our phosphojet, the phosphoric acids help, you know, but essentially it's turning on the plant's natural defense system. So we're just helping the plant be stronger in some aspects.
I got a guy, a member over in Sullivan County. Now, this is on small blue spruce. He's spraying Bravo weather stick on it and saying it's working. It looks like it is. I have no idea. I don't know whether it's because they're young or whatever, but I don't know. I get calls about this all the time.
You know, I go to a lot of plant talks, and sometimes, Ryan, what some of those good fungicides will do is sometimes they'll suppress or hide the symptoms. So it could be suppression of it. It could work, you know, without seeing it and knowing what it was done, but maybe because it's younger and he caught it, it is working.
If you're just tuning in, listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix. Up next, we'll ask Trent about some more success stories, notable pests, and, you know, what's the deal with chemicals anyway?
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fear.
so long. As I have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awaken from these dreams. People go just where they will. I never noticed them until I got this feeling that it's later than it seems. Doctor, my eyes tell me what you see. I hear their cries. Just say if it's too late for me.
Is supported by the Catskill Mountain Foundation's Mountain Cinema at the Dr. O Center for the Arts in the Village of Hunter and the Orpheum Film and Performing Arts Center in Tannersville for independent films and blockbusters every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Movie listings and matinee and evening times at 518-263-4702 or catskillmtn.org.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is plant health care with ArborJet's Trent Dix. Trent is speaking with us from down in Maryland. So, Trent, we get a lot of questions about chemicals. And whenever you talk about chemicals, especially in this neck of the woods, might not be any different where you are, I'm not sure. People are concerned about chemicals, and they want to know how toxic some of the chemicals used by ArborJet or other chemical companies are in tree injections, basal bark sprays, etc.
Everything is listed on the label, Ryan. The toxicity, but you can tell how toxic it is. I think the biggest problem is people misusing it and using products off label when they shouldn't be spraying. You know, because the tree was flowering. You know, and there's instances where you know, a large amount of bees were killed, but it was mainly because the person spraying sprayed off-label, you know. So human error is the biggest thing. I think if you follow the label and the law, you can do treatment sprays, bark sprays, soil drenches safely. I mean, it's all about following the label because that's the law, and you can make good decisions. And chemicals are very helpful. I mean, a lot of pests, we stop problems with them.
Are there organic alternatives to, say, using, emamectin benzoate or something like that, that work as well?
There is. Yeah. There is, Ryan. There's a product called Azduractin, which is our azosol product, which comes from the neem tree that you would just have to inject yearly to control the emerald ash borer if you wanted to go that natural way. But just like anything, when you're talking about natural and stuff, it is a little bit more expensive doing that, because you're going to have to do it yearly instead of every 2 years.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to weigh that against future drilling and every year, right?
That's correct. That's correct. You have to take all those into account.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's different chemicals, I guess. I mean, there's fungicides and insecticides, and is there any one of those that should be, you know, treated differently or thought of differently or more toxic or less toxic than another?
I think it all depends on the application, Ryan. I think the group of chemicals, the neonics, have gotten a bad rap, but they are very effective and very safe, you know, as long as they're used properly.
Yeah.
You know, the big issues with, like, the bees being hurt, you know, that could be from they're being overworked because they're traveling around all these different areas to pollinate. There's been the vero mite, which has been causing issues. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of different problems affecting wildlife and all that, and we need to take all that into account.
Hmm. You know, Trent, you travel all over the place, and you must see certain trees doing well, certain trees doing terrible. Do you have any recommendations on trees to plant that are just, you know, kind of relatively pest-free?
I think the key is to don't plant complete monocultures, you know, Ryan, like we did too often. When I go into an HOA retirement community and it's all maples, you know, I think the key to success is diversity. You know, planting some maples, planting some oaks, some Zelkovas, you know, different types of trees, locusts, you know, different pears, sugar maples, you know. There's such a wide variety. You know, the native trees are always a big hit, too. You know, mixing some things and planting them in the proper place, right? How often not do we see a tree that, you know, way too big planted right up on the house, which is going to cause an issue, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what do you think about, you know, are you totally against planting non-natives, or how do you feel about that? I mean, we've had people on this show in the past talk great about non-natives. Some want to cut our head off for mentioning them.
No, I think planting non-natives is fine. I think having a diversity of plants, you know, is always a great thing. And different layers and different effects, you know, and understory planting. You know, the more unique plants, Franklinia, you know, the Parodia type trees, some of the special trees that we don't see a lot of, you know, the tricolored beech, you know, there's so many different trees, but we have to know where to plant them. Too often not, we plant a tree in a 4x4 square and we expect it to live and be okay, and that's just not ideal. You know, my neighborhood, essentially, now you look out and there's red maples planted and they're already starting to push the sidewalk up because there's just not enough space for them.
Is there a place for Norway maple?
I don't know about that. I mean, it has been put on the invasive species list somewhat, Ryan. You know, it's just not a very pleasant tree. I mean, I guess everything has its place, but I don't know where with that. You know, some people tell me, oh, it's a nice tree, but I don't know if I agree with it. You know what I mean?
Fair enough. What tree would you say don't plant that? What tree is just not doing good, you don't feel is it's just a hard tree for most homeowners to maintain?
Hard tree for...
White ash, so you said, John?
Well, the good green one. Ash is what I would say.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. You know, when I started, probably 4 years ago, I went into a neighborhood development, and the guy met me, and he says, we've got a real bad problem with rust on these trees. And I'm like, no, you got a real big problem because you've just planted 300 ash trees that are 5 to 6 inch, and the emerald ash borer's coming.
Yeah.
You know, but the developer got a good deal, and he planted all these trees, but it's going to be a nightmare for the homeowners, you know, when it gets here.
So what things just make Trent shake his head when he sees things in the plant healthcare world that you say, man, you know, if I had just talked to that guy 10 years ago, besides the green ash example that you just mentioned, you know, what are things you're like, man, I wish I talked to that guy?
One thing was just some pictures I saw, Ryan. It was in the Cleveland, Ohio market. Someone had planted a maple tree, and it had grown up so close to the house. But instead of removing it, they just notched it out so the gutter and the house could stay.
They put a notch, you know, in the side of the tree.
Literally took a hatchet to it and notched it out.
Oh, crap.
And you and I both know the tree's probably going to die now.
Right.
They disrupted the thing. So things like that are a little concerning. You know, what people will do, not realizing that it's going to have a cause and effect. Essentially, to the safety and well-being of them and the tree.
I saw a guy that was even more ambitious over by Napanock in Ulster County on Route 209. I pointed this out to John. John, do you remember this? This is crazy. Have you ever seen this? You got to listen to this, Trent. The guy, he built platforms going up the tree so he could prune it.
Oh, yeah.
As he went up. And he got up to around, I swear to God, 30 feet, 45 feet.
Like scaffolding.
He put scaffolding so he could prune. Have you ever seen that? That was awesome.
I actually have. It was in my hometown, and I shook my head because the branch fell and took down some of the scaffolding, and I'm like, there's better ways to do this. This is not the way you do it.
I mean, he's ambitious, though, you know? Man.
He must own a construction company.
They must be carpenter or something, man, because I'd be like, wow. But that definitely took some courage to do. But so Trent, you know, you've been doing this for 25 years. Looking back, what are some big changes you've noticed in plant health care and horticulture? I know that's a big question.
I think the amount of money people put into plant health care is a lot more now, Ryan. I think and that depends on markets too. You know, some areas don't spend as much to take care of things because they're like, I can buy one for just as cheap. But I do think there's a lot more thought and care in people's landscapes now and how they take care of it and maintain it. From what I've seen as it's prolonged, people do try to save their landscapes. There's a lot more sentimental value to trees. We just started this year, our iconic tree saving thing, and we're actually going out and saving some of these iconic trees in that aspect, Ryan, to preserve, you know, because I think we need to save some of these trees, because if we start to remove trees and we lose trees, Ryan, like we have, you and I probably won't see the newer trees that they plant mature. Our kids will, but I think we need to take care of what's out there, you know, some of these trees that are out there.
Trent, was that that big tree you were? Well, we have a photo of you injecting a huge ash tree. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That probably was one of the largest, or maybe the largest white ash on record, if it's the one in New Jersey and a blacktop driveway around it. That was one that I just did last year, and I just did a bunch of elm trees in Roanoke, Virginia. We adopted those to take care of them, you know. So trying to save these historic trees is it's a passion for our company, and I think we all truly want to just save the trees, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, geez, you try to grow trees, and that tree's growing underneath pavement. It's unbelievable.
Correct.
Well, Trent, thank you for coming on tonight. We're just about out of time. I wanted to ask you, you know, where someone can find ArborJet, and, you know, how do they go about finding out about you guys?
If they go to our website, Ryan, the www.arborjet.com, you can open it right up, and there's a Find a Tree Care Service Provider and Where to Buy, our distributors. They can type in their zip code and find it.
All right. Well, Trent, thank you for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it, and we'll be hearing from you soon, I'm sure.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys. You have a great night.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks, Trent.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Trent Dix from ArborJet, and you know, we're talking about plant health care. ArborJet's a you know, they make they save a lot of trees, and it's pretty cool stuff that people are doing with chemicals. They, you know, it uses, it treats the tree systemically, so it goes into the tree, spreads throughout the entire cambium, and kills those little emerald ash borers, which is, hey, that's a good trade-off.
Yeah, it's the most effective way. You got to inject them. And I think it's fun to think about some of the trees that Ryan and I have injected around here that maybe those will be the only ones standing in the next 10 years or so. It's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, already, John, we're seeing some places like that in Phoenicia where we've treated some trees, and every tree around looks like has symptoms of death and dying. So we're already seeing that, right?
That's right. So if you have any questions about treating trees or emerald ash borer or where it is and where we've seen it, you could find us at the Catskill Forest Association at our day jobs and get more information there. But
These guys like Trent Dix from ArborJet and others from Rainbow Tree Service, they're just a wealth of knowledge. And these guys get around, and they you know, just talking to them, you always learn something. And so if you ever see Trent on the road, track him down, although I'm sure he's probably busy, but you know, ask him about some trees probably going to go treat. So that's about all the time we have on From the Forest. And again, if you missed the show, it was Plant Healthcare with ArborJet's Trent Dix. Up next is mostly British. Not all British. Mostly British. With Rick Neblong. And that's all we have tonight. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by.
You are listening to WIOX Roxbury. Community radio at 91.3 FM and WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Home Goods of Margaretville, corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Margaretville, New York, offering professional and at-home chefs in the Central Catskills region, cooking basics and tools of the trade. Home Goods carries Cuisinart, KitchenAid, All Clad, local pottery, and more. Open 7 days a week. 845-586-4177 or hgom.net.
WIOX is supported by Boyer Sign Company. Traditional sign making using modern technology. Serving the Hudson Valley and beyond since 1990 on Route 28 in Phoenicia. More information at 845-688-3079 or BoyerSignCompany.com.